We have two speakers this evening. After the 10-minute speaker is finished, we will have a 10-minute break for coffee and fellowship, followed by our feature speaker. And I have been asked to be your 10-minute speaker. My name is Sarian. I'm an alcoholic. And let's see. I think I was born an alcoholic. I had alcoholic tendencies my whole life. I overdid or underdid everything. Drinking was real common. Like, it was normal. It was every night, my whole family. It was how you celebrated. It was for dessert. It was for special occasions, for breakfast. It was for everything. So I was drinking as a small child, like just always. I don't remember my first drink. I know by the time I was 10 years old, I'd be given a half a wine cooler or a half of anything that they were drinking. And even at 10 years old, I'd finish that whole half and a half of another one so I could carry around that second bottle half full and make it look like it was my first bottle. And I did that forever. I was blackout, throw up drunk by the time I was 12. And it was my way of life. I struggled always. I was alone a lot by the time I was 14, 15. My parents had a liquor cabinet. I was home alone all the time. I drank after school every day. I never knew any different. I struggled my whole life, and I really didn't have to because I didn't go without anything. I always had everything that I needed, but I made it my own life difficult through my alcoholism and addictions. And I had, you know, 18 more years after that of drinking to get better at hiding it, lying, getting more, sneaking, deceiving everybody. And I couldn't quit. You know, at 16, I knew I was an alcoholic, and I was trying to quit, and I couldn't quit. And I would vow, you know, to never drink again every single weekend and be drunk again next weekend. And so I knew I never had trouble with that, admitting I was a real alcoholic, because I knew I was a real alcoholic. My trouble was just quitting. And I tried to quit for that long, since I was 16, and it failed every time I went through, I guess, pretty much what all of you went through in my drinking and my struggles. What happened to get me sober was just the same old thing, over and over and over, and I got super tired of it and super tired of myself. I racked up a bunch of DUIs. My first one was when I was 17 and I was introduced to this program. And I loved it from the first time I went. I related with everything that everyone said, but I mean, I was 17. I wasn't ready. I had a bunch of freedom and I wanted to drink some more. They don't make you go to AA after your first DUI, I guess because it didn't work the first time. But I racked up a few more. The last one that I got was my, like, the first thing that happened that really got me sober. I didn't get sober that day, but it was just the beginning. It was the beginning of the legal battle that got me to rehab. I lost my license. I lost my car that day. I couldn't drive. I was on methadone at the time. I couldn't get to the clinic, so I quit, and I was sick for about 6 weeks. And through that time, I drank still as much as I could. Anyone who would bring me alcohol, I kept drinking, but I was still on my road to getting here. I had to either do jail time or go to rehab, and I went to rehab. Thankfully, it probably did me a lot better than jail. And I didn't make it through that first rehab. I drank. But, I just couldn't handle it. I didn't like being sober. I spent a week planning and scheming, trying to figure out how I could get any relief from being sober. I just couldn't handle it. And I got my relief from being sober, but I got caught and I got kicked out and I felt so stupid and so pathetic. You know, all the other girls could stay sober at least long enough to get through rehab, and I couldn't even do that. And, I drank for like 48 hours, and then I was just done. I couldn't handle it anymore. My daughter knew I was drunk. My mom knew I was drunk. Everybody knew I was drunk, and I was just done. I'd been through, you know, detox and withdrawal before. I figured I could get through having drank for 48 hours and quit without, you know, dying, even if I felt like I was gonna. So I just did. And I waited out my next 30 days until I got back into rehab. And that was my last drunk. But this time I was ready. When I went back, I was ready. It was different. It wasn't any better. It wasn't any funner. But I was ready, and I was going to stay sober no matter what. I picked up a lot of tools that I needed in the program. I met a lot of people. I got a support group. I got my journey started. And I'm just really thankful that I got through all that to get to where I'm at today. I could never finish anything. I didn't finish high school. I didn't finish college. I always get my life kind of back on track, and then I drink it right away again. And hopefully I'll never have to do that again. And so now I get to be sober. Now I don't have to drink through anything. Now I get to come to meetings, and I get to meet all you, and I have the best friends in the world, a lot of whom are in this room. Everything's just good. Life is meaningful. Life is worthwhile. Everything is better. And I get off track sometimes, and I've been off track lately. I feel unbalanced. I'm trying to do a million different things, and I put my sobriety, like, second behind all that stuff that I want to do. But in reality, if I wasn't sober and I didn't have a program, I wouldn't have all that other stuff to do. I wouldn't have my job. I wouldn't have my hobbies. I wouldn't have places to go. I wouldn't have people to see. So when I get asked to do stuff like this that I don't feel comfortable doing, I'm super happy that I'm here, because it reminds me how important all of this is, and that I need to be doing it, and I can't forget where I came from. How long have I talked? One minute. Well, I guess we can go on break. I'm done. Hi, I'm Sari, and I'm an alcoholic. Now I'd like to introduce Albert G. from Visalia, who will be our feature speaker tonight.
My name is Albert, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm also a proud product of Pine Recovery. That's where I got sober April the 8th of 1989. Chapter 3 says we're like men without legs. They never grow new ones. That's me right there, man. So I'm going to do my best to try to stay standing for the remainder of the meeting. And if I can't, I'm just going to sit down. I don't really need a microphone anyways, you know what I mean? I remember when I got sober, they told me that if you want to stay sober, you need to do three things, eh? One, you need to be willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety. Two, you need to get a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Three, you need to read the first 164 pages. So, I'm the type of person that when people say things, it registers, and I do it, eh? So I was willing to go to any lengths for my sobriety, so I stole a big book, eh? Okay? I remember when I went back and made an amends for stealing this book, and I went to return it, and the guy says, you still sober? Yeah. You sponsoring anybody? Yeah. He says, you earned it, eh? Orale. Isn't it funny how you'll hit up, you'll panhandle for booze and dope, but you won't panhandle for a book, eh? You know what I mean? It's like, hey, can you spot me, you know, for a quart of Schlitz the Bull or, you know, or something like that? But you won't ask, can you spot me for a big book? You know what I mean? It's like, really? You know, and I hear people say, if you need a big book and you can't afford one, I'll get you one. And I'm thinking, well, where were you when I got sober, man? You know, I say I wouldn't have had to stole mine. But I also stole a 12 and 12. So I stole them both at the same time, and I read them both. I didn't read the first 164 pages. I opened up my book to 165 and started reading the stories in the back. I tried reading the beginning of the book, and it was boring, eh? You know what I mean? But I started reading the stories, and this is a third edition, okay? And I related to the stories, eh? In the back of the book, there's a story. Oh, and I got to tell Catherine, because I always borrow her glasses when I go to meetings. I came prepared today, man. I was reading this story in the back of the book. When I was in Pine, they had a room that they called Animal House. And Animal House, it was a skid row hallway upstairs, man. And they had ashtrays all over the floor, you know. And we would come back from the Alano Club all sprung on that Christian crank coffee that they had at the AA meetings, man. And then we'd come back to the house, and then you're all zoned on that coffee, man. And I couldn't sleep. And I didn't read the book because I wanted knowledge. I didn't read the book because I thought maybe if I read it, I might learn something. I read the book because, you know, if you've ever been locked up, you know that good reading material, man. You got to have good reading material. And I'm not saying this was good reading material at the time. It was the only reading material, you know what I mean? And I couldn't sleep. So I would read because I knew once I started reading, my eyes, they would get all, you know what I mean, tired and stuff. And then you start nodding out and doing all that. So I'm thinking, well, I can't sleep. I know. I'll read. I came across this story, and I'm not going to read it all because it's too long, eh? This is a story about a five-time loser who wins. This loser won. It says the worst of prison treatment couldn't break this tough convict. He was serving time on his fifth felony conviction when a miracle happened. I'm not a five-time loser to the state. I'm a three-time loser to the state. I did a year and a half in CYA when I was a youngster, and I lost to the state also twice as an adult. And my last one was my seventh felony conviction. I timed it just right, eh? Because, see, my last felony conviction was my seventh, and then some wise guy got this hair up his butt and thought he had a great idea. I know, let's come out with a three strikes, you're outlaw. And I'm thinking, man, I'm glad I did mine before they came up with that one, you know what I mean? Because that'd really be a mess, you know? It says right here, for me, as for most alcoholics, it was eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. But of course, I couldn't die. I painfully awakened each time, mentally, physically, and spiritually sick. Nothing could pull me out of the abyss but more alcohol. And for the people that tell you that you're not allowed to talk about drugs in AA, it says right here in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, later on it took alcohol fortified with other drugs to pull me up. Still later, even alcohol and chemicals together could not lift me. We always or nearly always had good intentions when we were released from prison. But with the first drink, our good intentions dissolved. Our personalities changed. We reverted to the old way of life. We knew. A life full of anger, vindictiveness, resentment, fear, dependence, denial, self-will, irresponsibility, and we found ourselves back in prison, where our personalities became even more warped. I remember when I made my amends for stealing this book, and somebody, sightbuster, you know, the people that like to burglarize conversations that they're not even involved in. This guy says, "Well, you know, Albert, you shouldn't be stealing these books because that's old behavior." And I looked at him, and my mind says, "Your mother's old behavior, right?" Thank God there was a guy there named Marcelo. And Marcelo knew a little bit. He knew enough to say, "Actually, that's not true. That's not really old behavior, Albert." He says, "When you walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the only behavior you know. Right? That's why you're here. That's the behavior that got you here. I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous to improve my already wonderful life. I didn't come here, you know what I mean, honest, eh?" You know, it's funny because we were at El Nuevo earlier and we were talking about how it was everybody's fault but mine, eh? You know? And that's the way my mind was when I got here, eh? Sobriety and a plan for living that produces a personality change and a spiritual awakening are imperative. Through AA, many receive the needed change and awakening just by trying to live by AA principles and associating with AA people. We do this by going to many AA meetings with an open mind and a desire to live the good feeling life without chemicals, liquid, or otherwise. Through AA, we can experience freedom from self. Trip out on this. After all, it was self, meaning me, that stood in my own way, that ran the show and ran myself into bankruptcy, that hurt the ones I loved. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are designed to kill the old self, deflate the old ego. I'm still working on that one, eh? 27 years later, okay? And build a new free self. This is my favorite part. I'm still arrogant, egocentric, self-righteous, with no humility, even phony at times. But I'm trying to be a better person and help my fellow man. Guess I'll never be a saint, but whatever I am, I want to be sober and in AA. The word alcoholic does not turn me off anymore. In fact, it is music to my ears when it applies to me. God bless all you people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially fellows in prison. Remember, you have a choice. Jesse said during the smoke break, "Are you going to talk about me?" I said, "No, I'm going to talk about my two favorite subjects, alcohol and me. And if there's any more time left, I'll talk more about me." Is that the way alcoholics are, huh? You know? I want to tell you why I asked Sarian to be my warm-up, eh? She's a good youngster. And some of the things that she didn't tell you is that she's going to have 2 years on the 22nd of this month. It's kind of weird how we met, eh? I used to secretary this meeting called the Message of Hope in Visalia. You know, all the houses show up and stuff, you know, Pine, Visions, and all that. And she made the mistake of sitting right behind me at a meeting. And I scolded her. She said I yelled at her. I didn't yell at you, Miha. I scolded you. There's a difference. If I'd have yelled, you'd have known it, eh? You know? But I've watched her. Just like I've watched a few others in here. Blythe and some others, you know, that are still kind of new a little bit. But you know what? I see these people and they're young. And I want to give a shout out to their young people's meeting. Because Zach and a few others got together and started a young people's meeting. They got one Wednesday night. Yeah, I know they got one Wednesday night in Visalia. One here tonight. That's why they're all here. You thought they came to support me. No, they were already here, right? And they got another one in Tulare. And I was asked a couple of times if I would go to the young people's meeting. And I'm like, orale, come on, man. I'm 54 years old, eh? I know I don't look it, but I am. And I'm thinking, why would I go to a young people's meeting, man? I got no business there, eh? And this gal, she says, Albert, how old were you when you got sober? I was 26, eh? She goes, see, there's a lot of people there that are your age, that are the age you were when you got sober. And they need to hear from people that came in young and stayed here. I've never read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it says that relapse is okay. It happens, but it's not okay. And the reason it's not okay, and you know, step 8, made a list of all the persons I had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made it direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, right? Well, I'm going to make an amends to all of you right now because I'm going to piss some of you off, eh? And I already know that. So I might as well make my amends up front, right? It saddens me, man. It saddens me that I've witnessed in the 27 years that I've been sober, it saddens me that some people think this is a joke. And it's not. My mother saw 4 of her kids go before her. And my daddy. You know, my daddy died. They shot and killed him when I was, I think, 7 or 8. I don't remember. I remember when my brother Carlos got killed in Folsom, Represa, California. I remember when my sister Annette was loaded. She was cruising around and the cops threw the lights on her. All she had to do was pull over, right? But because of the stupid example that all of her brothers had set for her, she didn't want to go to jail. So she decided she was going to try to outrun that cop, eh? Well, it was raining that night. The soft shoulder was muddy. And she asked me, how do you lose these cops when they chase you? I said, cops will always stop at a stop sign. And when you're going to make a turn, you always hit your lights, eh? So they can't see you. Well, she turned off her lights because she was trying to outrun this highway patrol. The front tire caught the mud and spinned the car, and she flew out of the car and into a standpipe, an irrigation standpipe by Temujin's packing house right there in Yetam. And it cut off half of her head. My sister Lupi was the one that prepped my sister Annette for the funeral because they insisted on an open casket. You know, I was at a noon meeting today, and thank God for the old timers because they're the reasons that I stayed sober. Bernard, I love this dude, man. And some of you guys probably know who Bernard is, eh? And Bernard, he says, I'm the most important person in this room today. And then, of course, Bo had to follow suit. You guys know Bo. And Bo says, well, Bernard, I hate to disagree, but actually, I'm the most important person in this room today. And then they made the mistake of calling on me, eh? I said, you know, and I love this saying. People sometimes don't understand it, and I think that's why they get offended. I said, well, I'm not the most important person in this room. But I'll tell you what, we're all God's kids, I tell them. And sometimes I just feel like I'm his favorite, you know? And one, you know, I say that because I believe that. That's how I feel. And then some dude, he obviously didn't hear right. Well, what makes you think you're God's favorite? I said, I never said I was. I said, I sometimes feel like I am. I said, try listening, eh? You might get it, eh? And then he got mad and walked away. I want to share a couple of things because there's some people that are here that I've had the privilege of watching them come in. And there's a couple of faces in here that will tell you they hated my guts when they first met me. Why, I don't know. One guy said, man, just the sight of you made me sick. Orale. And it's cool because now they see me, they hug me, and they say, I love you. It's going to sound to you like I'm bragging. It's because I am. But I'm not bragging about me. I'm going to brag for a few minutes about God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the life experience changes that I've had and continue to have in these 27 years that I've been sober. And then you'll probably understand why I feel like I'm God's favorite. And just in case if any of you are thinking, no, this isn't a bowling shirt. I don't belong to a bowling team. I don't play golf. I'm a lowrider, man. I cruise. It's in my blood, eh? It's what I do. I mean, I just cruise, eh? You know, slap on some Motown or some oldies. And I brought Rolling Stones for Sherry, though, because it's her kind of music, eh? You know what I mean? So I got to compromise. You know, I learned how to compromise in here. And I remember when I got sober, I started going back to the car shows and the car clubs and doing stuff. And back in 1978, we started a car club in Cutler called Nuestro Estilo. Well, that car club didn't last 3 years. Nuestro Estilo means our own style. We kind of wanted to bring our own style to lowriding, right? And the reason our car club didn't last, because every time we'd have a car club meeting, we would spend all of our car club dues on booze, man. You know what I mean? So we never really built anything up, and we never had money for trophies. And we spent so much money on alcohol and drugs that our car club was the only car club in Tulare County that had only one plaque. You know how all the cars they fly their plaques in the back? We only had money for one plaque, eh? So whoever, when we would caravan, the car at the end flew the plaque. Tell me that don't sound like an alcoholic. Oh, man, that's too hard. It sucks because it's true, man. So I get sober and I start going to these car shows, and I love car shows. I mean, like I said, it's in my blood, eh? You know? And I remember Nuestro Estilo was asking me, are you going to come back? You going to come back? I'm like, no, man, I'll be the only sober member if I join, eh? I go, all you guys drink and half of you smoke weed and the rest are slamming something, eh? I go, I don't want to join your car club, eh? And then Brown Society hit me up to join their car club. And I said, nah, your qualifications are too high, man. You know? I don't, you know. They go, well, then who are you going to cruise with? And I told them, I go, the one that has got me through all this, man. I cruise for Jesus, man. You know what I mean? So that's who I cruise for. And I do it sober. I have 8 DUIs, 5 high pursuit chases on my driving record. I got sober in 89, and I had finished a DUI program called Care School. And I went to go get my license, and the DMV said that I would never get my driving privilege reinstated. So I was walking out of the DMV, and at his desk, some gal, she goes, "Hey, Albert, is that you?" That's me. And I looked at her and I recognized her. Orale, we went to school together, eh? She goes, "What happened, man?" I go, "I went in, and the driver safety referee and all these idiots, they said that I would never get my driving privilege reinstated." She says, "In 30 days, appeal it." I know all about appeals. I've been appealing my whole life, eh? You know what I mean? She says, "In 30 days, man, come back and appeal it, eh?" Orale. So I did. I went back to the DMV 30 days later, and I appealed it. Denied. And I couldn't understand why. So the third time that they denied me, when I went back the fourth time, they pulled out this file, eh? And they're saying, "Mr. Garcia, you're never going to get your driving privilege reinstated, man." I said, "Why? Because of the 8 DUIs, man? I know people that got like 20 of them, eh? You know, it has nothing to do with the DUIs. You got 5 high pursuit chases on your driving record, man. You don't belong behind the wheel of a car." And then it dawned on me, man. I finally realized, "Oh, I get it." I go, I see the mistake you guys are making now. I go, you got that file there with that guy's driving record. Oh, man, I wouldn't give him a license either, man. Shit. Are you crazy? He doesn't deserve one." And the lady looks at me, because there's 3 of them, right? The board. And she says, "Well, isn't this you?" I says, "No, that's not me." I go, "That person died April the 8th of 1989. This is me." That person no longer exists, eh? And I learned that because I learned about the 4 paradoxes of Alcoholics Anonymous. Surrender to win, suffer to heal, die to live, and give it away to keep it. See, that guy that was out there doing all that crap, that person died when I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a God that I'll probably never understand, eh? You know what I mean? And they sat there and they looked at me and they said, "Okay, we're going to do this." They gave me my driving privilege reinstated. But they put a stipulation, eh? If I get 1 ticket, boom, it's gone, no more. And I have to renew my license every year. I have to go back in and renew my license every year because of those 5 high pursuit chases. And it's a trip because about 10 years ago, no, probably a little bit longer than that, I went to the DMV to reinstate my license. They says, "You don't have to come back. Your license is good for 7 years, man." I said, "No, I got to come every year, eh?" They said, "No, you don't." It's a trip because when Sarian was talking about school, I got held back in elementary school. My group went to high school, and I stayed back for a half a year because I didn't take school serious, eh? And I didn't take it serious. I thought, "I'll make these teachers suffer for keeping me back. I'll show them, eh?" Well, when my half year was up, and I should have went to high school with the other people that got held back, they kept me, eh? And I was angry. Mr. Hendricks was my history teacher. He says, "Hey, Albert, check it out. We want you out of here more than you want to be out of here. You know?" He says, "I'm going to make a deal with you. I've already talked to the principal. I'm going to make a deal with you." He says, if you can recite the preamble from the Constitution, I will pass you to high school." My mom, my sisters, everybody was trying to help me learn this preamble. And I couldn't remember it, eh? I couldn't remember it. It just wouldn't stick, you know what I mean? Thank God for Saturday mornings in Schoolhouse Rock, eh? Yeah. That Saturday morning was the routine, man. You know what I mean? The Frosted Flakes and the big Tupperware bowl. The bong hit. And Schoolhouse Rock, eh? And it came on. Oh, and I was feeling it, eh? You know how you feel it? You feel it? I was feeling it. And I had that "We the People" in my mind. So I go back to school on Monday, and Mr. Heinrich says, "Hey, do you know the preamble?" I said, "Of course I do." And he says, "I want you to stand up in front of the class and say it." "No, I can't do that. You just said you knew the preamble, eh?" I go, "Yeah, but I'm not going to stand in front of the class and say it, eh?" He goes, "Do you know it or not?" I said, "Yeah, but I only know how to sing it." My look good went gone a long time ago. I stood in front of my peers, and you can't act hard when you're singing "We the People" from Schoolhouse Rock, eh? You know? So they moved me to high school just so I can get kicked out and go to continuation school, man. So I'm thinking, my mind says, I did all that for nothing, you know? I got kicked out of high school. I mean, out of continuation school. This is a trip, man. My homegirl, Sally, she's cool, man. She goes, "Hey, Albert, you want to take me to the senior prom, man?" I said, "I ain't got no money to take you to senior prom." That was my beer money, right? She says, "I'll pay if you take me." Orale, let's go, eh? So we go to the senior prom, right? Mr. Milhorn was the vice principal at Arosi High. I'm a student at Lovell, which is a continuation school in Cutler. Sally's a high schooler. She's a senior. So we show up, and he stands right there and says, "You can't go in the senior prom." And Sally goes, "Yeah, I'm a senior. This is my prom." "No, you can go, Sally. Albert can't." Orale. And she said, "Well, I already paid for us." He pulls out his wallet and gives her money back, eh? And says, "You ain't going in with him, eh?" I want to share something with you. And again, it's going to sound like I'm bragging. It's weird because I got 8 DUIs, 5 high pursuit chases, 7 felony convictions, a premeditated attempted murder, assault with the use of a firearm, 3 cat burglaries, 2 strong arm burglaries, and firing into a habited dwelling on my felony conviction records. And I got the printout because I've been a school counselor. I used to be a school counselor here in Porterville, eh? And see, every time I apply for a job working with youngsters, the state, the criminal justice, whatever it's called, they automatically send the schools a printout of my criminal history because of the felons. And so they get to decide whether they want to hire me or not. Like I said, I've been doing time since I was a kid. I've done a lot of things that I'm not proud of. And I've hurt countless people that didn't deserve to be hurt. All right? Well, when I got sober, they asked me, they go, "What are 3 things that you want in 3 to 5 years from now? If you could have anything you want, what would you want?" That's what my guide, Marcelo, asked me. And I says, "All I want, number one, I just want to discharge my D number. 2, I just want everybody to get off my back, man, and leave me alone, eh? You know, and 3, I just want to get on with my life." He says, "None of that's going to happen." And in my mind, I flipped them off and stuck them in the neck with an ice pick, you know, in my mind. But instead, I said, "Well, that's encouraging." He says, the reason I can tell you that it ain't going to happen, because since I've met you, you've never once ever mentioned that you want recovery. Because without recovery, none of that's going to happen anyway, see? So my arrogant mind said, this mother, what does he know, eh? Well, I've been sober since April the 8th of 1989. It's weird because I worked at a DUI school in Kingsview in Hanford. I worked at Corcoran Prison when they activated Walden House at Corcoran. There were 52 of us that were the first staff that rolled up there before any of the inmates rolled up. We were there. I have in my weight room at home, which by looking at me you can tell I don't go to that room very much, right? In my weight room at home, I have my discharge from parole, and right next to it, I have a picture of a certificate awarded for appreciation for activating the program, helping activate. I had the privilege of being one of the first 52 people to set foot on that prison before they brought the first inmates and helped put together that program. You know, like I told you about my elementary school, I used to be a case manager at the juvenile hall. And the mental health worker didn't show up to work that day. As a case manager, I'm just kicking back, right? And one of the guards or whatever they are at the juvenile hall comes up and says, hey, there's this girl, man. We think she might be suicidal, you know. And we need so-and-so, Nicole, to do a suicide assessment. I says, Nicole's not here, eh? She called in sick today. He goes, and we need you to come and do it. No, you don't. You know what I mean? I haven't got nothing to do with that. I'm just a case manager. He goes, well, somebody has to. So my supervisor, I called and said, you need to send somebody down here to do a suicide assessment on this youngster, right? And she says, well, you do it. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. She says, I'm telling you what to do. If you don't want to do it, find another job. So I walked up there with the guards, eh, and I stuck my head and I looked in the window and I said, yeah, she's suicidal. Put her on suicide watch, man. And I went back to the office, right? They asked me, why did I do it? I said, because in the first place, I shouldn't have been the one to do it. In the second place, I'm not going to make a decision on something that I know nothing of. What if I said she wasn't and she did? I'm the one who's got to live with it, not you, eh? You know? Well, my supervisor got fired. I got promoted. You see? And I'm like, wow. So these people from Porterville come down here and they say they want to start this program for little gangbangers here in Porterville. And they asked me if I would come and do it. I felt stereotyped. I don't know why, man, but you know what I mean? But I did. And instead of going to the office like they wanted me to have this kind of like staff meeting and stuff, I thought, nah, I'm not in that big of a hurry to meet these people, man. So instead, I cruised around Porterville, eh? And I cruised down every one of the alleys, and I got to familiarize myself with the city of Porterville. Okay? And I got to see the graffiti, and I got to see everything, and I learned all about, you know, OBS, and I learned all about PMD, and I learned all about these different gangs here in Porterville and what they were all about. And then I put together what I figured out. And then when I finally met with these people, they said, well, where you been? I says, learning about Porterville. What have you been doing, man? Sitting in an office drinking coffee or what? And so I did that. So I became Tulare County Gang Task Force Counselor for Tulare County. They had a threefold pamphlet, and it said on the cover of it was a little kid standing right there in an alley with graffiti and beer bottles and cans and trash, and this little kid's about this big. He was from Lindsay. And on the cover of the pamphlet, it said, gangs, not my kid. You know what I mean? Well, when you'd open it up, there was my number. I've worked for the county. I've worked for the prison. I've worked for the schools. That was not my plan, eh? My plan was just to get my PO off my back, eh? That was not my plan. The reason I say I'm bragging about my higher power, because see, God had a better plan for me than I did. I was just going to get clean, get on with my life. But I would have never stayed sober had I not done what the old timers told me to do. You see, the 12 promises, you know, I have experienced every one of those 12 promises more than once. When I came here, I thought I had nothing to offer, eh? I ain't got nothing to offer anybody, man. I mean, come on. I'm just a messy pants wino that don't drink, eh? You know, I'm just a greasy, like a slice of bacon dough fiend that don't use. Because my self-esteem was so low. You know, I would have never showed that. Because, you know, we learn to mask those things, eh? I am probably one of the most afraid, insecure people that I've ever met my whole life. I had been afraid my whole life. I lived in fear my whole life. Everything that I've ever done, all those chronos I got for that altercation and sticking that dude underneath the gun tower in the joint, that wasn't an act of bravery or warriorism. Everything I've ever done was an act of fear to survive the environment that I got myself into. And I didn't want to die in there like my brother Carlos did. I wanted to make it out. And I did what I thought I had to do at that time, or I would have died, just like my brother Carlos, eh? Having those 8 DUIs and working as a DUI counselor was a joke in itself, eh? I've had the privilege of working in a program called RSAT. And I worked there for 11 years at the county jail. I remember my first week at RSAT. I pull up to the parking lot, man, and I'm walking in and I see this sergeant there, eh? Well, I remembered him when he was a rookie and I was an inmate. So I go into RSAT and I'm teaching my class, right? One of the deputies is standing there. He says, "Hey, come here." I said, "I'm in the middle of a class right now." So one of the counselors took over my class so I can go see what this knucklehead wanted, right? I say, "Hey, what's up, man?" He says, "The sergeant wants to talk to you." Orale. So I start to walk to the sergeant's office. They go, "No, he's in the parking lot by your car, right?" By my car? So I go out to the car, man, and this guy, this sergeant, these two sergeants are standing there and three sheriffs, right? And the sergeant that I remembered said, "I need you to open your car and your trunk." I said, "No, you don't." And he said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "Why?" He says, "You know, you walked by me when you came to work and you reeked alcohol." I did, orale. He goes, "Well, maybe it was your cologne." I go, "Come on, I'm in jail. You think I'm going to wear cologne to work, eh? All these vatos in here, man." He goes, "Yeah, right. That one ain't going to work either, man. You got to do better than that." You know what I mean? I said, "I will open up my car under one condition. I'm going to bring somebody out here with me as a witness to stand here with me while you look through my car, because I want to make sure you don't put nothing in it." I says, "I know why you brought me out here, because you remember me from the 80s, man." I says, "And it doesn't bother me that you brought me out here. What bothers me is that it's people like you that give inmates the wrong impression that they can never change. That people can't change. That we're nothing but a bunch of alcoholics. We're nothing but a bunch of drug addicts. We're nothing but a bunch of people walking around piece of caca with eyes, man. And we're not. But because of people like you who look down on people like me and think that we can never do anything with our lives or ourselves." So I did that. I got a witness. We opened up my car. They looked through it and he said, pop the trunk. I says, when you're done with the inside, I'll pop the trunk. I can't watch both. You know what I mean? The next day, I get called into the lieutenant's office. He says, you know what, Albert? He goes, I want to apologize to you for what happened yesterday. I heard what happened. And I want to apologize. I said, I'm going to accept your apology, man. Not because you owe me one, because you weren't the one in the parking lot. Your staff was, and you're, you know, having to save face, and I respect you for that. I'll accept your apology only because you were man enough to give me one that you don't have to give me. He said, well, I want to ask you if you want to file a complaint. God, you can imagine what went through my head. File a complaint against the sheriff. I would love to. You know what I mean? But instead I said, no, I don't want to file a complaint, man. I go, I just come here to do my job. I go, the only thing I want from you guys, okay, so we're on different sides, eh? But we're really on the same side. You don't want to see these people come back, and I don't want to see them come back. So let's work together, man. All I want is for you guys to just back off, let me do my job, and we'll leave it at that, eh? I never seen that sergeant again. I have never, ever seen that sergeant again for the remainder of my 11 years working out there at the county jail. The reason that I'm telling you these things, again, is not to brag about me. I'm just an alcoholic, eh? But God has blessed me so much. I've had the privilege of working in a jail that I almost burned down back in 1980 when we put that place on fire and burned everything that would burn, from clothes to mattress covers to mattresses, you see? And I had the privilege of going back to work at that jail. I got held back in elementary school, got kicked out of high school, man, and never finished continuation. And I've had the privilege of working as a high school counselor in Porterville for 3 years and had the privilege of being part of Porterville becoming an all-American city. When we wrote that grant, we never knew that Porterville was going to be an all-American city. It was the gleaners who provided food for the families that didn't work because of the frost, and it was because of the gang task force program, Alternatives for At-Risk Youth, that got these kids. I used to go to, they'd say, so-and-so didn't show up in school. Orale, give me the address. I'd go to that kid's house and I'd yank them blankets out and say, hey, let's go. You're going to school. I ain't going. Then let's go to juvenile hall. Either way, you're going somewhere, man. And they'd get in the car. Okay. And then we'd go, eh? Alcoholics Anonymous, it didn't save my life, eh? It didn't. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life. I didn't have a life, eh? But I come in here and I meet people like David and Catherine and people that these people saw someone in me that I didn't know existed within myself. These people befriended me. They welcome me and invite me to their homes. You see, Anita, she says, I'm glad that, because Anita got me by a month and a day. And a month the same day, huh? Because you're March the 8th, I'm April the 8th. But that's okay, I can live with that, eh? And she said one day, she goes, you know what, Albert? I think God separated us for 20 years or so because we probably would have bumped heads and clashed, man. Yeah, you're right, Anita. Too much alike. But we've grown. We've blossomed. We've learned. We've matured. And we have this gift called recovery. And we're able to take this gift called recovery and use what God's given us to try to help someone like us. There's a pamphlet called Around the Clock with AA, and there was a guy by the name of Bill V. Bill V wrote in 1947, I think it was, in the Around the Clock with AA of why we were chosen. He said that God chose and gave the gift to an alcoholic what he could not give and would not give to a judge, a clergyman, an attorney, or a doctor, or anybody else. He gave that gift to an alcoholic, and it's the gift of being able to understand another alcoholic. Nobody's going to understand me but people like me. And you understood me when I got here. Thank God that our code is love and tolerance, because you people loved me and tolerated me. You loved me when I hated me, man. You tolerated me when my own family wouldn't tolerate me, man. You know what I mean? Alcoholics Anonymous, for those of you that are new, all right, is the best thing that ever happened to me. And you know what? I almost screwed that up in the beginning because I didn't want it. I learned a word. It's a cute little word. I like it. It's called serendipity. And, you know, and the only reason I know this word, because at the meeting they do the serenity prayer. And growing up in the barrio, I didn't know what serenity meant, eh? So I looked up the word serenity. A feeling within oneself. A feeling of inner peace. And I started to understand what serenity meant. Right under the word serenity is a word, and it says serendipity. And I thought, wow, that's a funny word, eh? Serendipity means to be able to find something delightful purely by accident. I didn't want this. That's the honest to God truth, eh? I had no intentions on getting clean or staying clean. I just wanted to get everyone off my back, eh? You know what I mean? I fought this. I didn't want to do it. I didn't even want to do step work with my sponsor. My first sponsor was from Dinuba, Dennis Ehoff. He died when I had 5.5 years sober. Dennis died. And I remember Dennis because he would drive from Dinuba all the way to Visalia to meet with me once a week. And all he wanted me to do was this. And he says, I'm going to come down here next week and I want you to memorize that third step prayer, right? So he drove the following week all the way from Dinuba to Visalia and asked me, what is the third step prayer? Nope, don't open that book. I asked you to memorize it, eh? I thought, what a punk, eh? And that's one dude, man. I wanted to stick him in the neck with an ice pick a few times too, you know what I mean? He said, look, I'll work with you. I'll help you. And I don't mind driving from Dinuba every week to see you. But I will not sponsor somebody or waste my time with somebody that is not in recovery. And if you're not working them steps, he says, you're not in recovery. If I come back 1 week from today and you don't have that third step prayer memorized, waste somebody else's time. Because people die from this shit. So guess what I did? And I didn't need Schoolhouse Rock either, man. I memorized that step. And I didn't have to sing it either, man. You know what I mean? That thing is tattooed in my brain. I could not forget the third step prayer even if I tried, eh? I just couldn't do it. It's not doable. You know? Thank God he didn't make me memorize the seventh step prayer and the 11th step prayer. Because that's too much, man. You know what I mean? You know, that's too much already, eh? But Alcoholics Anonymous, man, is the best thing that ever happened to me. And to think how stupid I was in the beginning, that I wanted to screw this whole thing up. You know, when I see these people that come in here, you know, and I went to that young people's meeting on Wednesday, I thought, man, these youngsters, man, they got a good thing going, eh? They got a good thing going. And I hope they build it and make it stronger. Because I got sober when I was 26. And I'm 54. And like Anita, we've stayed sober. You know. And I want to say one more thing. I'm looking at the clock. I'm old school, eh? I have been old school. I'm always going to be old school. I'm going to die old school, man. But I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous from what I've seen. There's old school. David, me, and anyone that got sober, Anita, in our era. Okay? There's new school. And they don't get it. And then there's those that we see all the time. The no school. And they don't have a chance. Because they don't even try. I thank God that I got sober in an old school AA with an old school sponsor who taught me the old school way of working out of the book. I thank God that I'm old school. I don't want to be new school. I don't want to change something that already works. The funny thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, one more thing, eh? I'll never forget, I was listening to Bill Wilson, and he spoke the day that Dr. Bob died. Bill Wilson had this felt hat. I mean, Dr. Bob did. Dr. Bob had this hat, and Bill Wilson liked that hat. Sometimes Bill would get in the cab and drive over to Bob's house, and sometimes he would take the hat home. Lois, Bill's wife, used to put that hat in a box and mail it back to Dr. Bob. So why do you keep bringing his hat? You know that's his hat, right? Well, one day, Bill is visiting Bob. Now, Bill did not know that this would be the last time he would ever see Bob alive. But Bob knew. Bob knew this. And Bob walks Bill out to the door to walk him to the cab. He says, "You know, Bill, looks like you might get a little rain tonight. Take my hat." He had never given Bill his hat. That day he did. Bill never looked up to the sky to see if it was cloudy or going to rain. There wasn't a cloud in the sky that night. But Dr. Bob gave Bill Wilson that hat. And that night, Dr. Bob died. You see, what Dr. Bob did was he knew what Bill wanted, and he freely gave to him. And that's where they came up with that term, pass it on. Pass it on. You people passed on something to me that I didn't think conceivable, possible. Not for me. Maybe for you, but not for me. Because my opinion of myself wasn't very much. And because of what you people passed on to me, it's my responsibility as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to pass on to you what was freely passed on to me. I want to thank you for asking me to come here. And I look around and I see certain faces, man. And I got to tell you, I love you very much. The support, everything that you've done. You know, you've been there for me when I had my open heart surgery, that 5-artery bypass. You've been there for me when I had my stroke. You've been there for me when they took my legs. And you people have never left my sight. I don't know what I've done to deserve that. Because I learned something here. And the 12 promises taught me this. I will never, ever be proud of the things I've done. I will never be proud of that. But you people have taught me that I don't ever have to be ashamed of it either. God bless you, man, and happy New Year.